welcome everybody to the Who Goes There podcast, episode 2. If you've made it this far, we love you very much. I mean, fuck it. You've gotten one in.
Oh.
What's another one?
Now you're fitting another one.
Yeah. Well. So, let's see. What did we have on the docket today? I don't think there's too much going on in the world of horror in the last week, I guess. But
Maniac came out.
Maniac Elijah came Wood. Out. Is it to wide release?
Yeah.
I think we may have to check that out. I've heard it's...
I'm into it. The first one was amazing, and it's... if you haven't seen Maniac, I don't want to ruin that, but that has some pretty what-the-fuck scenes in it.
I might freak you out a little bit.
Do it.
I don't think I've ever seen the original.
Well, you should. You haven't seen Hatchet either, so...
It's true, but...
You disappoint me on a regular basis.
I know. Well, it's...
It's okay. It's okay. We'll move on.
Moving on.
So, my entire life has consisted of nothing but playing The Last of Us for the last week.
Ah, yes.
When we left the last podcast, I basically saw it on your table, and I went home and downloaded it right away.
Well, right away by Sony server standards. So yeah. Would it take like 3 days?
4 days later.
4 days later, you got to play.
No, then so I got to install it.
Then you got to install it. And then, well, first you had to do your fucking PS3 update.
Yeah.
And then, anywho. So I've been playing it since the day it came out. And I think I've got maybe 4, maybe 5 hours in because there's a lot of shit going on in my life. Mm-hmm. Haven't really had too much time to devote to it, but it's incredible.
Spectacular. I have one complaint so far, and of course I'm going to.
Yeah.
But my only complaint is that I don't see a lot of replay value in it. Just because the enemies tend to just walk the same path over and over again, and I feel like once you know where they're going to go and once you know all the shocks and the surprises, it's kind of done. Like Heavy Rain. I don't know if you played Heavy Rain, but that was a great horror game. And
You're right. You're absolutely right. I think it's one of those things where even if they release DLC packs, like,
I heard that you unlock different camera filters after you beat it, which could be kind of cool.
Come on.
You know, but one of them's supposed to be like a grindhouse where it has the cigarette burns. It's real grainy. And I know it's very little compensation,
Jesus Christ. No, dude, you're right. There's no replayability there.
No. And speaking, I don't want to get too into that game because we haven't beat it yet, but speaking of stuff that didn't pay off.
Oh, come on, man. It wasn't that. Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Today's film is VHS 2.
VHS 2.
In case you can't tell, it is the second film of the VHS saga.
Which, in case you couldn't...
VHS 1 came out in 2012, and in October of 2012, they rushed production on VHS 2 due to the positive feedback that they received. So they rushed production, and everything on the internet says rushed production, because then they went and screened it for the first time in January.
Okay, so... While I agree that the timing on when the first one was released to when the second one was released, I don't think that it was necessarily rushed. I think it's maybe that they had these movies on deck, these short films on deck, and were just like, fuck it.
Like, this is the B team? This is the junior varsity that didn't
make
the cut?
Well, can you imagine?
The
so the way I was thinking, because have you seen ABCs of Death at all?
You know, I haven't. I feel like I knew nothing about that until recently, and now it just seems like it's everywhere.
Okay, so here's my thought process on it before we get into the actual film itself. I'm not a huge fan of anthology movies, horror not being the only genre of anthology movies, but I think that given the way they're made, I don't think it was rushed in any way. I think it's probably like, we had 20 movies to pick. We can only pick 4. We've got our 4 for VHS 1. Now we've got 4 others for VHS 2. I think.
Okay.
I think. I don't know. That's just...
It could be. I mean, I'm thinking that they're kind of like 20-minute horror movies, even if you had 3 to 5 to 6 months in between, not even just production, but the release of the first and then the second one, you could at least find some with a little more intriguing storyline. And we'll get to that when
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so it's essentially, it's like the first one, it's a...
For people who don't know the first one.
Yeah, it's an anthology film. Both are VHS 1 and VHS 2 that are split into 4 and 5 movies, respectively, short films. And they have sort of a overarching plot that kind of joins them together. It's essentially... both are built around a house that people either break into the houses,
honestly,
right?
Honestly, I don't even remember the first one.
I think they broke into the first house anyways, and they find a room full of VHS tapes, and for whatever fucking reason, these idiots... They have to start watching them, and they get transfixed, and we see basically them watching the movie as sort of like a sub-movie to the whole thing. It's literally the same movie... twice, yes. But with different
interchangeable parts.
Right.
Neither one of these individual short films affects the main arc at all.
Exactly.
They're all completely interchangeable, even interchangeable with the movies in the first one. And I think that's kind of a thing that turns me off. And I want to start by saying that I was really excited when the hype for VHS 1 came out. There was that, and I think Sinister and some other movie that all released their trailers at about the same time.
I think Insidious, too, right? No, Insidious was much before. Sorry.
And so VHS, I was really excited about because it seemed like a good outlet for a lot of young aspiring writers and directors.
Yep.
I mean, look at Masters of Horror. That was, you know, John Carpenter.
Oh, those are some huge guys, yeah.
But...
yeah.
The fact that they could do really quick, easy, one-hour horror movies, I figure if you give a couple of green guys 20 minutes, and I was disappointed with the first one.
So, and that you said you're disappointed with the first one, I agree. I think we're going to do just a quick touch on VHS 1. I wasn't happy with
VHS 1.
I don't
remember anything about VHS 1.
I didn't like it. There was one that stood out to me, which was the sort of the haunted house... at the end, where they sort of show up to that little seance and...
Sure.
Okay, I mean,
my mind has repressed it. That's how much I did.
Okay,
like
well,
it.
Of the short films, that one was the standout one. And I think anybody who's watched VHS 1 and is listening right now would agree that the last short film was probably the best of the bunch. But anywho, VHS 2, same formula. It's a couple, I think. They're a couple, or they're an investigative team.
You know, I think you don't really find out until later, but...
He's
a PI.
He's a PI. That's exactly what it is.
And I was always under the impression she was his secretary, but at the very, like, not at the very end, but towards the end, he calls her baby.
Which could be both. I mean, she could be assistant slash...
You know, but then reading some stuff online, it did say husband-wife, but I don't know. So it's really irrelevant.
Yeah, it really doesn't
If it is his wife, he winds up being a huge dick later. And all.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go ahead and do a quick... We're just going to rattle through kind of each short film as we get to it. We'll give our thoughts, see what we felt about it, and... go from there.
And drink beer.
So... And a Dark and Stormy at some point.
Dark and Stormy, yeah, we need that too. So, when it starts off, you see the PI, I can't remember his name right now, I'll think of it, but you see the PI and he's looking through the window of, or he's filming people going into a hotel room, a guy and a girl, and then he starts filming them having sex through the window and we get our first glimpse of boobs, which is always a plus. Because you had said on last week's episode that your wife had made comment about there being a lot of boobs in this.
There's a lot of boobs and not enough dick.
But
she literally said not enough dick.
The bat.
And I think that's sort of.
There was one dick to two sets of boobs in this movie. I feel like that is.
It's a good ratio.
No, that is still disproportionate. I need 3 sets of boobs per dong.
Oh, so you're saying you want less dick per boob?
Yes,
okay.
I need 3 sets of boobs per dong. A 1-in-3 ratio per movie. So, and if,
well,
the,
I
if
guess
there's,
shows,
two, if there's
I guess
two sets
that shows
together,
where,
that can count
where
as three.
My pregnant wife's mind is, but hey, what are you going to do?
But still, second movie we're reviewing, and there's the dong in both.
It's true.
So, Brokeback Mountain, here we come.
Hey.
Yeah. So he's filming, and then you find out basically that he's a PI. He gets in the car and he's talking to somebody about blackmailing, blah blah.
Well,
then,
I feel like you're explaining this way too much. Like you said, it's fucking irrelevant.
I am.
This
so is, then he tells his wife secretary that they're gonna go check on this missing college kid, and they're gonna get $1,000 a day for doing it. And I thought that was really weird at first, because it's like, why would somebody pay $1,000 a day for a missing college kid? I mean, I understand you're going to do it for your family, but he acts like that's an obscene amount of money.
Right. He definitely does.
So they go to his house, and the mom didn't have a key, but she said, oh, the back window's broken. You could probably get in through the back window. You're gonna pay $1,000 a day to find your son, but you won't pay $50 to go to Home Depot and fix his fucking window so people don't break in and kill him, right?
Well, yeah. So, again, I feel like we're explaining this way too much. The homegirl ends up in a room with the VHS tapes and starts the first movie.
Yeah,
which is, I think, affectionately called The Eye? Is that
no, it's, you're way off.
Is it the fuck? Well, I don't fucking
know. It's called Stage 1 Clinical Trial.
Oh, God. Yeah,
and,
that's right.
And the actual overlapping arc is called Tape 49. I don't get how that works, but each one of these little things
is tape, is numbered.
Each one was a different director, was what I was going to say.
Oh, okay, sorry. Yeah.
And the overall thing and Stage 1 Clinical Trial... I think they were both by Simon Barrett. But, okay, you want to talk about Clinical Trials?
Yeah, do we want to talk about...
How shitty it was? Shitty it was?
Yeah, of the films in this movie, it was far and beyond my least favorite. I thought it was a little bit hokey, just kind of all throughout. I guess we can't really talk too much about it without explaining sort of what happens. The guy...
We need to explain what
there's
happens.
There's a main character, and he gets essentially a bionic eye.
Yeah, he's in a car accident, and his eye gets fucked up, and they give him a recordable eye.
Which is silly, because why would it need to be recording?
Right?
I don't fucking understand why it's...
They say that the... what was it? The some fucking organization wound up giving him the eye for free, the implant for free. And, the KPG Corp gives him the implant for free. And they're like, you can't expect them to just give you a free implant and not test the data. So they're clearly testing a new prototype, which could be used maybe, you know, for Marines in the field, where they can just insert it in their eye and record what's going on in the field.
Okay, well, I guess...
Maybe, and I may even be giving it too much credit.
For how much you say you dislike this movie...
You see my notes, I do my homework.
You did a lot of notes, that's true. And essentially what happens is the eye is recording what he sees, but then also starts... he can start seeing sort of spiritual
ghosts,
things.
Ghosts, manifestations.
And it winds up... that he starts getting haunted basically by a little girl and a guy.
And then he spends most of the 20-minute film in the bathroom hiding.
Bathtub.
And it's not even, you know, like a prolonged period of time where it's suspenseful and drawn out to show how long he's been in there.
Yeah, no.
He just goes and hides in there like five times.
Yeah. So I had sort of an interesting thought about what he was seeing initially. Mm-hmm. I was under the impression that the little girl and the man that she sees were who got killed in his car accident and are haunting him.
Oh, that's fucking interesting.
That's the impression that I got, because when at some point he... So the girl with the bionic ear.
So when he's leaving the hospital after getting the implant, there's a girl, and as he's walking out, she just stares at him,
right?
Just, like, can't take her eyes off of him. And a day or two later, she shows up at his house, like, actually really kind of brazenly.
Yeah, you know? Really forceful. God,
she's like, I could see you through the peephole. Let me in.
Yeah, and practically rapes the dude. I mean,
before that, she's like, you know, you have any beer and painkillers, and then. So, like, she just wants to get fucked up and tell this dude a story.
Yeah, so...
Dude, but you got to talk about how this, like,
the rape. Go ahead. No, I'll let you do it.
So she's explaining, you know, she got an ear implant because she was born deaf. And so she can hear these people. And she hears a girl crying in his house.
Right.
And later, they're talking, and there's this fat dude in a diaper that's kind of just like barfed blood all over his chest, and he's just standing there looking like the baby from 13 Ghosts.
Okay, so sort of along my thought process was that the little girl and the man were the people in the accident. If I'm not mistaken, she said something about her uncle.
Yeah, she said it is her uncle, and he's like a creepy guy, or he's not nice.
Right, so I think... She killed him.
Oh, okay.
So,
see, you did the thinking on this app. On this, yeah. I thought last week.
This is your week to kind of chill out. So, and again, I know these aren't great movies, but I think they, and maybe they were a little too subtle with the hints, but I think it was pretty clever the way they sort of gave us little hints as to who these ghosts were. And not to give too much away, but both of them end up...
Well, we didn't even talk about the rape. How are you going to keep bringing up rape if we're not going to talk about the rape?
Why?
So, Jorge doesn't want to talk. I understand it's a sensitive topic, but this is just fucking ludicrous.
Matt loves rape is what I've... Hey. What I'm getting.
We're keeping that quiet. But this is just so absurd. So her uncle is standing there, and as soon as he's like, there's a guy behind you, she starts taking clothing off.
Yeah.
Like, slow, her shoes, her jacket. And then she's like, don't pay attention to him. I know how to make him go away. And she takes out her boobs.
Yeah, which was...
And, yeah.
This is nice.
After last week, I'm not going to talk about boobs. Which I think... But, yeah.
I left all that in, by the way.
Yeah, good. I didn't want to have to tell Christian what I said before the show today.
So good.
So, yeah, basically the way to get her uncle to stop watching is to fuck some dude, I guess. Which I don't understand.
I don't know if it's so much to get her uncle to stop watching, but...
To take his mind off of it?
To take her mind off of it. Or both of them, rather.
So, yeah, they fuck, and then they're the next morning, he sees a ghost or something, and he hides in the bathroom.
Again.
Then she gets pulled into the pool by a force you can't see. He tries to save her. She ultimately drowns. And then he goes into the bathroom, and he starts cussing at his eye.
Yeah.
And he's hiding because the ghosts are outside, and he takes a straight razor and cuts his eye out.
Cuts the eye out.
And then the ghost still comes in
and
bitch slaps him and then takes the eyeball and shoves it down his throat. And I thought that was the ultimate just... But then, just before we did this podcast, I found out that the guy who did the acting in that, the guy who couldn't act his way out of a wet paper bag, was director Adam Wingard.
Oh, shit.
So, I'm guessing he was just like, yeah, nobody can deliver these lines the way I need it.
Guys, I've got it.
You know, I'll do everything, guys.
Yeah.
You know what? Why don't you give me your phone so I can call craft services, too?
So, yeah, I would say that if we're going to rank these in order of, you know, best to worst.
Let's just give this one a grade. VHS has a bunch of letters. Let's give this a fucking letter grade. I give this a fucking F minus. No, you know what? I'll give it an F plus.
Me, baby.
Those boobs were pretty great.
I don't know if I would give F plus. A D. Solid D.
D?
It was bad.
You know what? Those were double Ds. We'll go double D.
Yes. Wow.
This show just gets better and better.
Doesn't it, though?
So, all right. After that fucking turd... It goes.
Jesus.
I'm sorry, dude. I really didn't like. And I rewatched this movie. I really didn't like this movie when I first saw it.
I'm surprised you rewatched it.
No,
be perfectly honest with you.
Well, because I wanted to do my homework.
Yeah.
As I rewatched it, I developed at least a partial appreciation for it. Some parts came out and I was like, oh, okay, I get what they were doing there.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
I appreciate it more. But that first one was just a fucking bomb.
Okay, yeah. Well, we'll agree that
I'll be less critical from this point out, I believe.
Probably, because they get better and then...
Well, I don't know. Once I get more beers in me.
Speaking of which...
Okay, so while Jorge does that, after the first one, we see it goes back to tape 49, so the PI and everything. The woman's watching the video, and the detective comes back in. And I can't remember their fucking names for the life of me. But the PI... What's that?
Doesn't matter.
PI comes back in. The girl's like, oh, yeah, you know, the tape was just really weird, but it couldn't have been real. And they go and they play a video confessional from the guy that they're looking for. And they actually did that before the first tape. And he said he found this tape and he got it from some dude in Little Armenia who you wouldn't be expecting to see trading with us. So there's obviously like this underground group that he trades with. And it's they say later that it's... It's like snuff and CP
right.
and stuff
well,
like
and
that.
Well, and actually she watches, so she ends up seeing one of the video, a video of the first, the guys from VHS-1, if you remember.
Oh, the show her tits.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so that's what, I knew I'd seen that.
Yeah, so that's
one of... And they didn't show her tits, at least not in the
no,
video.
No, well, I think they got a little criticism for being a little...
Too real?
A little too rapey. And
that shit happens, man.
Oh shit.
It does. I'm not saying I do it, but that shit happens. Japan does a lot of fucked up stuff.
Okay.
Not that only happens in Japan. There's dickheads everywhere.
You've just managed to insult just across the board everyone, but that's cool. That's what we're all about. Whatever with the
yeah,
in-between.
So,
second film.
No. The in-between one is slightly important. So they watch the video, and then finally the guy's like, this is the final link for me, and I've heard that the only way the tapes affect you...
Oh, you're talking about the dude. Yeah,
yeah,
gotcha.
Is if you play them in the right sequence. He said, but I've been experimenting, and like that's when they confirm, yeah, this is the dude we're looking for, and then they put in the next tape.
The next tape. Which is...
Ride in the Park.
Is that what it's called?
Ride in the Park
Ride
is what it's
park.
Called. I called it GoPro in my notes.
You called it GoPro.
Because it's filmed entirely with a GoPro.
With a GoPro, which is pretty nice. Speaking of, we're going to do a quick
pause.
Callback to episode one. I took a quick look at Christian from The Battery.
Christian Stella.
His equipment that he used for
The
Battery.
At his equipment. It wasn't even in the movie.
I know, right? God damn, those guys are fucking amazing.
It was an actual camera.
It was just an SLR.
We've sucked enough battery dick, and
we have.
And Christian will be on the show at some point.
I feel
and I'm
like
sure
we're sucking a little too much.
I'm sure Jeremy and maybe even Adam. I don't think Adam will ever talk to us after the things we said about him. It was your character, buddy. You played a really great shitty character.
So anywho, I just wanted to just a little throwback.
We digress.
Appreciate the equipment. Yeah. It was done with a GoPro,
yes.
And was essentially what we're just gonna straight up call it a zombie movie.
Mm-hmm.
It had an interesting take. It was essentially a guy on a mountain biking trek, stumbles across your typical...
He's got a very unsatisfied girlfriend, it seems too. His girlfriend, remember, she calls him at the very beginning, and she's like,
you
know...
You spend your time riding back.
I wish you would take me for a spin. You spend more time riding that bike. He's like, well, baby, it really grinds my gears. He doesn't say that.
Might as well have.
So he goes riding off on his trek, and this woman comes out screaming, help my boyfriend, help my boyfriend. And, you know, he's looking around, and then she falls to the ground, and she starts spewing out this, like, black blood of
which
the
was
earth.
Pretty cool. I enjoyed the spewing. That was pretty awesome.
It was pretty great. And then, you know, enter stage right, zombies.
Zombie.
He's like, I got a big fucking stick, you know, and then he realizes, I got to go back and help this chick, because fuck these dudes.
Right.
And then, of course, in true zombie fashion,
he gets bitten.
Bitten. Actually, she, like, sprung on him, too.
Yeah, they were pretty 2007 Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, they were pretty 28 Days Later.
Pretty spry. Pretty spry for zombies.
Yeah, so he gets bitten, and there's actually some really cool shit that happened when he was bitten, just like the way it was all shot from his helmet cam on his GoPro.
Right.
So you just see this blood spurting out from somewhere off camera as he's running.
Yeah.
And that was like just really fucking cool. I thought that little attention to detail played a big part. So he runs along and eventually he collapses and he dies and, you know, he pukes black blood of the earth again. And then right as soon as he dies, these two bikers come along and...
And we do the whole thing all over again.
And that chick, like, couldn't act at all. She's like, oh my God, like, we found somebody, and, like,
he's totally dead, collapsed.
And, like, there's blood everywhere and no pulse, and I feel like he's been bitten. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it was okay. Pretty... That was pretty...
Irrelevant.
Yeah, I think it's important. I think...
The horrible.
I know.
Like, she was the only one that was just
I talk a little bit of shit about you being nitpicky, but I think
I'm incredibly nitpicky.
I think in an environment where you have such little time to make an impression, I think everything counts. I think you're right. I think
thank you for putting it that way. Because I couldn't think of how important it was, and I needed to convey that point, and I just couldn't put those words together.
And stuff like that in a short movie is very jarring. You know, one person misacts, and you're done. You're out.
But when she, spoiler alert, when she becomes a zombie 4 minutes later, she's actually a really convincing zombie.
She's a good zombie.
All she's doing is staring off into space. Okay, so yeah, you know, she's on the phone and the guy's finger twitches and he's like, oh, I think I heard him breathing.
And then,
he checks his pulse. Now they're zombies. She runs off in the woods and the first guy with the GoPro starts to eat the bike rider. And there was a really weird scene, and I'm only going to put this in because my wife and I had a talk about it earlier. He's eating, you know, the guy's fingers, and then he grabs the guy's wallet. And he takes a bite out of the wallet,
and
he's disgusted, and he throws it down. And then he rubs the guy's stomach. He's like, oh, you know. And then he starts eating the guts, which is really fucking cool. Like,
right,
the guts look great. So I just want to talk about that wallet, and then I'll get back to it in a second. But then the girlfriend comes out of the woods looking like an awesome zombie, and she comes and starts feeding on her boyfriend.
Yeah, yeah.
Who then sits up looking like, what the fuck?
What are you doing? Yeah, that was pretty good. And then the it sort of continues on, and they end up on the three of them end up on a birthday party.
Like, yes. Old man's birthday.
Old man's birthday?
It was. I thought it was a kid's, but they say happy birthday, grandpa.
Son of a bitch. Okay. Well, anywho.
That's why I do the rewatch.
And it kind of goes a little bit bonkers at that point, which is, I don't know if it's I mean,
but
bonkers
still,
in a good way.
No children are eaten. Ever. When are we going to finally break through that line where zombies can eat children? We've already seen Rambo turn them into fucking liquid guts with his giant Gatling. Well, that wasn't. But
it's
they
true.
Killed children in Rambo.
They did kill children in Rambo, yeah.
Not that I'm advocating killing children.
And the party basically gets all fucked up and people try to drive off.
Goes
and zombies
awry.
Are fucking chomping on people. The original GoPro zombie finds a little bit of humanity at the end, even though he's a zombie.
Right. As he's trying to break into this car to get to these children, he sees his reflection in the van window.
And then he gets a call from his girlfriend.
After
and
he gets hit by a car. Well, he tries to... He sees a teddy bear on the floor. And
yeah.
He's like, ooh.
And for me...
Then he gets hit by the car.
For me, that's when I was out.
Exactly.
Like, I was like, oh, shit, really? Like, why? Like, why do we...
I don't like the idea of zombies having, like, memories and
no, they're fucked, they're...
Because,
no.
And this is where my wife and I got into the discussion. She was saying, well, maybe he's not completely turned. He's just dead, but he still has his brain intact and it's rotting down. And the further time goes, he becomes more of a zombie and forgets everything.
Weedy whack.
And then I said, well, okay... Entertaining that idea, why, if he had enough cognitive, you know, whatever, to do what he did in the end and realize who he was, did he try and eat Homeboy's fucking wallet? Because he wasn't driven by the need to feed, and if he was, it wasn't, or he was driven by his primal need to feed there.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, oh, I really love the smell of this wallet, I just want, no, like, he tried to eat the fucking wallet because he's basically feral at this point.
Yeah. And he's, I think he's supposed to have been too far gone to really, I didn't like it. I didn't like the way it ended.
Yeah.
I thought it was...
So
I thought it was shitty, to be perfectly honest.
For those who haven't seen, he gets a call from his girlfriend, or he butt dials his girlfriend, and she calls him a goofball or something.
He totally butt dialed me.
You
totally.
Goofball? Oh my god! Oh, okay, god, well, I love you, Michael. And then he crawls over to a shotgun laying on the floor and blows his emo head off. Actually, he blows his brains out and then blows the GoPro off of his head. Which is kind of cool, only because it went spinning and then it landed and showed his blown out.
Yeah.
Domicile.
I did not like it. Not the ending, not one bit.
I hated that one the first time. Not hated. I disliked that one the first time I saw it. I got a more of a appreciation for it the second time through.
Okay, all right.
But the ending still irks me.
It's jarring almost.
And it's not because it's, you know, these aren't zombies I'm used to, you know, so
no,
I don't feel comfortable.
You know what it was, dude?
I just feel, if you're fucking dead, you're dead and your brain doesn't work.
Look, to be 100% honest, it was, it felt like it was fucking trying to be too clever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you're so clever, you director, you've put a different spin on zombies, yeah. You son of a bitch.
It's a twist.
Yeah, and look, I love zombie movies. I fucking love them. I even kind of dug Land of the Dead.
See, and I was going to bring that up because those zombies were like really fucking
what
smart.
They
walked under the goddamn
the guy
river.
The guy was shooting Og bars all day long.
Yeah.
Like, no big deal. But
we can review that another
yeah,
time.
Yeah, yeah, that's for
I really did like
a classic
movie.
Episode. If you can call
Sky
Land of
flowers.
The Dead. Anywho. So yeah, that's how that one ends, and I think we both feel the same, that it was a good effort that just fell flat at the very end.
I give it a C-.
Agree. C-.
I would have given it a C+ or a B- had it not gotten all, and I appreciate the sentimental, sometimes you gotta zombie it up for the ladies, but... They lost me. He had too many feelings and
yeah.
too much after.
Yeah. Okay. And?
So then we go back to the main arc. It's cool. These ones are really short. Look, so...
Let me see your notes. Look, they are very short.
These lines each indicate a video. So this one is in between 2 and 3. So the PI comes in, and the secretary's girlfriend is totally zoned out, and she's bleeding from the nose. Looks like an anime character that got incredibly horny and popped a blood vessel. And she says she must have fallen asleep. Her eyes were wide open, and she was sitting up.
Yeah, and as if your nose just bleeds spontaneously when you fall asleep.
Yeah, fuck, whatever. Every time I go to sleep, I bleed from my nose, so... and then he says, is it one of your migraines? And she doesn't have her pills. And he says, there's a liquor store down the street. I can go and get some. And she's like, yeah. And she's really visibly disturbed at this point. Almost looks physically
sick. Something's going on with her. Something's going on with her.
Right. And she's been crying. She's acting weird. And so then, right when Homeboy goes to pick up the pills, you see... the guy they're looking for. And, you know, I call him Friar Tuck in my notes because when you first see him, he's got this hood.
Yeah,
and he almost
hood,
looks
yeah,
like Homeboy from Assassin's Creed. And if I would have remembered his name first, I would have called him that. Wasn't that? It was like Ezli, some fucking weird name.
Okay.
Whatever. You've probably played him more than I have.
That's true.
I only played the first. Regardless. So you see fucking Friar Tuck like crawling. Slightly just... Okay, we're doing it again. This is why we have fucking 190.
This is why we're editing.
Yeah. Okay. So, and then you see Friar Tuck crawling in the doorway of the background, and then she puts in another tape, which... Oh.
is fucking bonkers. Yeah.
And of course, this is the only one directed by an Asian director.
And I think Matt and I both agree that is the crowning achievement of VHS 2.
Yes.
It was fucking bonkers.
But before we get too far ahead, I do want to acknowledge that Eduardo Sanchez and Greg Hale were the directors of Ride in the Park. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Throw it out.
This one is called Safe Haven, and it's directed I am going to slaughter this, by Timo Tejanto.
Good enough.
And Gareth Hugh Evans.
Oh, Mr. Evans.
And Mr. Evans.
Okay.
I'll let you take this one, because my notes are extensive on this.
This movie is, I've already sort of said it before, but it's fucking bonkers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of a nut about cults and things like that. I love reading about them. So right off the bat, this movie had me hooked.
Yeah,
they have this little Cambodian. They were in Cambodia.
It said they were in like Indonesia or India. It was something that started with an
maybe Cambodia. Might have been Cambodia.
Somewhere
I'm not sure.
In that general region.
We probably should have looked that up, but fuck.
I thought he was Filipino for most of the movie.
So did I.
It looked like Manny Pacquiao with so no facial hair.
Which I felt terrible about because I kind of know Tagalog because I've worked with Filipino dental assistants. And I kind of know Tagalog a little bit, and I should have known better, but, you know, what are you going to do?
You're a racist.
I know. Racist.
Fucking asshole.
It sort of starts off with a team of three kind of interviewing a small team of five, a small man, if you will. He's a very slight statured human being. And he's basically telling him, like, you know, what was he saying exactly? Like,
he's for some reason drinking this giant fucking Pilsner glass of milk.
Which was so fucking weird.
Yeah,
it was great.
Okay, I should have found out this guy's name, and George can use his technology to find out his name, but he was like the best creepy psychopath, like really unsettling little man that they could have possibly cast in this. So they're interviewing him, documentary, and he's essentially saying everything cults say. We're one step closer to paradise. Our paradise isn't in heaven. It's right in front of us. I hold the key to the gates. Things of this nature. Our struggle, our journey, our this, our that. And while they never...
Interesting fact. I'm sorry. He is billed on IMDb as the father, which is fucking cool.
That's what they called him. Anyway.
Yeah.
Father.
The father. And his name is Epi Kusnandar.
Kusnandar? Does it say his nationality? No.
No, but
good job. Look, see, doesn't that homeboy look like Friar Tuck right there?
He does.
He looks like Friar Tuck. Okay, so they never actually come out and say it, but they allude to the fact that he does unlawful, at least in this country, things with children.
Yes.
In order to cleanse their spirits. So that's essentially what the controversy with the cult, I mean, aside from being an actual cult.
Well, and that's what our team of five is trying to sort of suss out.
Yes.
You know, what shenanigans, if any, are going on in this sort of compound. It's very Waco. It's very, you know, that
right.
whole bit.
And they even, at a point during the initial interview, ask if they can go to the compound. And he says, I'm sorry, non-believers aren't permitted to enter Paradise Gates Commune.
Right.
So they convince him by saying, we're not here to judge you. We just want to provide you with a platform.
To express, yes. Which was strange to me that he kind of accepted, because he was very adamant about only
believers.
The chosen ones and the believers
right.
are allowed in. But
that kind of pans itself out later.
Yeah.
Like, this film was really, can you call it a film if it's so irrelevant?
Short film.
But this short film was so good that it doesn't really leave anything up in the air. Everything is kind of explained, at least somewhat.
I would even say if there are things that were left up in the air, it's so inconsequential that it doesn't even make a difference for the film, because it's let's keep going.
So they convince him to let him into the commune, and the next shot is a shot of a bunch of different security cameras, which I thought was kind of weird that they would have at a religious compound. But the first one is a guy dragging a bunch of big bags behind him, and then there's a classroom with some kids singing, and then almost like an altar, a sacrificial altar with paintings and symbols all over the walls, and then the office of the leader, the father, and he's sitting there with his shirt pulled up into his mouth, and he's playing with a razor blade and touching it against his stomach and shit. So you see, like, the security tapes alone made me think, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, but yeah.
Then you see the altar and the guy dragging the bags and the father with a razor, and shit is clearly fucked up in Denmark, so...
I almost don't want to talk about it too much, because it gets so fucking bananas.
So bananas.
That I would love not to spoil it for everybody.
I would love to just hit every fucking point on this, but I also... agree with you that it's so good that I really just kind of want you to watch it and say, what the fuck?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we should definitely talk about, you know, the
main points.
The main plot points, but we should leave, in case anybody is listening who hasn't watched it and is not paying attention to the disclaimer with spoiler tags, I think we should leave some of it to the imagination as far as this podcast goes. Basically, it devolves, the compound devolves into this Heaven's Gate sort of suicide thing where, you know, the father is chanting.
Cult leader.
And calling over the PA. Everybody, you know, it's time for
drink
our ascension.
Drink the Kool-Aid.
Drink the Kool-Aid, and they all drink the Kool-Aid in their own respective ways. There's actual Kool-Aid being...
You know, they actually passed out pills. And
was it pills? Okay.
It was pills and water. That's what it was.
Okay. And it was pills, and it was gunshots, and it was whatever.
Yeah, the gunshots were fucking crazy.
And what, you know, the crazy part was when you would see people that did it, and then there were guys that didn't go through with it, and then there was like a...
There was one guy who didn't go through, and he was shot in the back by another guy.
Yeah.
Who then... maybe it was him or maybe it was somebody else, essentially shot himself in the head.
Right.
So he killed himself, but he made sure that homeboy went with him.
Right. And all of this is fairly, I don't want to say...
irrelevant.
No, I don't want to say irrelevant. I wanted to say pedestrian, but that's not the right word. I think what I'm getting at is...
cookie cutter?
Right. When you're talking about a cult, like a cult sort of thing where they all like...
Well, they're clearly always going to off themselves.
But there is a point in this movie that you're going along, you're like, okay, yeah, it's a cult movie. People are killing themselves.
And then it turns into fucking Silent Hill.
And it just... yeah, dude. It takes its turn, and it's just like, what in the fuck?
Yeah, what the fuck happened?
I want to talk about it, but I also just want to, like, pull it up and watch it again this second.
Yeah, I almost wish we could just do that 25 minutes as the last bit of the podcast and just say the rest of the movie was all right.
I just... It devolves basically into what I want to say is just human... just...
fucking apocalypse. Yeah, it's like the second coming or something.
Yeah,
shit.
It's crazy.
And everyone who killed themselves became a zombie of some kind?
Some sort of zombie, demon.
It looked like a ghoul. I mean, it was Japanese. Okay, I'm being racist.
Oh, you're being racist.
It
now.
May not even be Japanese.
It's clearly
I'm sorry.
Not Japanese.
It's
We're
very
in Indonesia.
Insensitive.
It's very insensitive.
Only been misogynistic and other shit. I want to be racist. But fuck, all right. But,
we haven't really talked about it, but I don't even know what else to say without really saying what...
I don't know if they became ghouls or zombies, but then essentially shit hits.
We gotta talk about it.
Shit look, hits the fucking
We have
fan.
To talk about it. Okay. From this moment forward, if you haven't seen this fucking movie.
We really
movie,
gotta stop doing that, and we just gotta assume that people have seen the fucking movie.
Yeah. Okay. If you haven't seen it, sorry. Shut off. Come see
Fuck
us next
off.
Episode.
What
yeah.
are you listening to this for?
Go then? Watch the fucking movie, come back.
Okay, so. Jorge is gonna laugh. Quick bullet points. The main dude who's doing the interview, he is there with his girlfriend and his fiance and his best friend. She starts feeling sick once they start interviewing the father. She starts almost vomiting in her mouth and she has to leave. So they continue doing the interview, and the best friend, who you don't find out is the best friend until later, goes to check on her.
Mm-hmm.
At which point the battery in the camera dies. So the main character, named Mike, I think he's actually named Mike as well. He goes to get a battery out of the car, and everyone is hooked up to their own mini cam. Mm-hmm. So he sees his fiance Lena talking to his best friend. I think his name was Sean. I don't remember.
Yeah, I think it's Sean. Yeah.
So
right.
talking to Sean, and he basically finds out she's pregnant.
Yeah, we find out why she's been sick.
Right, and then. As they're all doing this, there's a bell that tolls, and the father gets on the PA and starts talking about, this is our time, now is the time, help us vanquish these fuckers.
Right.
And he kills the cameraman, slits his throat.
Which was awesome, by the way, because he fucking goes, he goes Dolls Him crazy on this motherfucker.
He went
dude.
Christian Bale in American Psycho. He was bathed in blood, casually slicked his hair back with blood and started humming.
An incredible scene. Beautiful. An incredible scene. Which, speaking of homegirl being pregnant, the cult members actually, before we find out, they actually say to her, like, oh, it's a great gift. That
Yours is going to be something spectacular.
Right. Before we even find out that she's pregnant, she says, you know, yours is going to be an amazing gift, blah, 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 blah. And so I think you're sort of led to believe that, you know, she is pregnant from the beginning, but we find
somehow,
out for sure, for sure.
Somehow they know. So he finds out, and the main character, I believe his name was Mike, I could be wrong. I had James originally, but I think James is the camera guy.
They're all...
So he runs back in, and this is when you see all the guys shooting themselves in the head and the guy running away, trying not to get shot. And he tries to fight the guys off, and he winds up getting caught up by three dudes. So the guy who went to the car to get the battery, he did something. I don't know what the fuck he did. But he ran back in the house, and he sees the main character, Mike, on his knees getting executed. And you find the friend Sean, or the camera guy, finds this room that he's specifically told not to go into. And there's this fucking bloody sheet, massive lump. And he uncovers it. And there's a woman there with her legs spread like
who
she's
who was obviously
birth.
Pregnant at some point in her life.
Yeah,
not,
there's
you know,
blood everywhere.
Yeah, blood everywhere.
He, you know, shakily tries to cover her back up. She screams, takes off, you know, holy fuck. And then eventually they kidnap the main pregnant girl, Lena, and her baby daddy finds her, and a horn busts through her stomach. And this giant satanic fucking goat man comes out of her, not of her, well, I guess of her womb. It wasn't birth.
Dude,
it just sprung forth from her womb. And shit gets crazy. Homeboy tries to run away. Goat boy T-bones him like a fucking Mack truck. And
let's not forget.
I don't even.
Let's
there's
not
so
overlook
much shit that
what
happened.
Goat Boy calls.
Yeah, that was my one fucking complaint about the movie. So the dude gets T-boned, and that could be the end right there.
Yeah, it could have been. It should have been.
It should have been. But because you could tell it was the Goat Boy that did it.
Yeah.
But then he turns on his camera, and he's trying to crawl out of the car, and he's holding the camera, and he's crying like Blair Witch, and the goat boy comes above or behind him on top of the car, and it just goes, Papa.
come on.
Right, it was brilliant until that point. I understand the message you're trying to convey. Like, he birthed the Antichrist.
But if we're talking about how fucking bonkers this movie was, it fit in properly. It was okay.
And that's what leads me to believe it's Japanese, because that little bit is the fucking zany bit that they just throw in there.
I was, when we were watching it, I was pretty unnerved by the whole movie. Yeah. But when he goes, "Papa," both my wife and I started fucking busting up. Yeah. And it was nice because, like, you were so tense and so wound up for the whole movie.
He had 6-inch snot worms hanging from his nose. Like, he was crying so hard. Like,
I think it was a nice welcome sort of, like, relief after the whole movie.
Oh, he just wants a hug from his daddy.
Yeah, and it was like, oh, God.
That's why he smashed the car and killed all those people.
That's how they're
going
to end the film? Okay, I like it. Cool, I'm in. I'm all in.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen the fucking movie...
Yeah, that...
You have to watch it. We may have spoiled it.
I give that an A.
The A plus. You may not have liked the very ending.
I took the plus away from because of the papa.
I loved it. I loved it.
That was the shining gem in this steaming turn.
It was hilarious, frightening, kind of really grotesque at some points. Just perfect.
Yeah.
I think it was perfect.
So, back to essentially...
The rest of the movie.
The egg that holds this shit meatloaf together. The overlapping arc.
Jesus!
Dude. <Okay. laughs> What can I say?
Continue.
So, yeah, the PI comes back in, and he sees the secretary on the floor. She's unresponsive. And he screams for help. And then he just kind of doesn't give a fuck anymore. He just stopped. He's not crying. He's like, "Baby?" So that's when you kind of get the little hint that it's
his wife
or his girlfriend.
Yeah.
But then, she's dead. Whatever. Oh, hey, there's a tape that says "Watch Me" written in lipstick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I should just do that.
I wonder who did that.
And then he puts in tape for "Womp Womp," which is called... You ready for this? You ready for this? Slumber Party Alien Abduction.
Which, right off the bat, I know that you and your wife were not fans of this one.
You know, I appreciate the name. I was a big fan of the really shitty 80s horror movies. You know, Slumber Party Massacre and those Silent Night, Deadly Night. But this one, it started off somewhat promising, if slow at first.
Okay.
It started off like an 80s horror movie, and then it just kind of fell apart.
Which was... Okay, so I like the way it started.
And for the record, this is written directed by Jason Eisner, and also written by Eisner and John Davis.
Okay.
Davies.
John Davies?
Davies.
Like corn, Jonathan Davis?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
I wonder if that's the same guy.
No, it's not.
No. There would be a lot more tits if this was the dude from Korn, I bet.
I don't want to. To be perfectly honest, I don't want to spend too much time on this one because
I don't want to talk about this one.
You don't want to talk about it?
Well, we can briefly
Let's just go real quick because I think.
Cool. Speed round. Go.
Speed round. So it's essentially a film where parents are away. Kids are at what's presumably a lake house. They're by themselves, probably older sister babysitting the two younger kids. Obviously, 16-year-old girl is going to have her boyfriend over, gets into some shenanigans.
Boyfriend's a huge dick.
He's a fucking gigantic asshole. And I thought it was kind of cute. The kids were putting the one kid in the fucking cage.
Well... Little side note. So boyfriend's a huge dick. Little brother invites his friends over. They're going to get revenge on the sister and the friends. Playful revenge. But yeah, they piss in water guns and super soakers and water balloons and attack the friends down at the lake.
Yeah.
And then for some reason the little brother and his friends put the one kid, the youngest kid, in the cage and just
yeah, and then so I wasn't 100% sure if I had seen what I saw if I seen it.
You seen it. That is to say you saw it.
When the kid he goes underwater at the at the pier.
Uh-huh.
Does he see one of the creatures?
Oh shit! I have no idea.
Okay, I'm not sure. We'll check it out.
It may
be. But essentially, this is an alien abduction movie or yes. short film. It hits all the right sort of alien abduction notes, except for the aliens themselves. They're kind of crappily,
you know,
designed.
My wife said the same thing, and maybe I just didn't notice it. I thought that they're. At least the silhouettes were pretty convincing, long and lanky. I'm whatever the
yeah,
fuck we
I mean,
expect
it's,
an
it's
alien
a throw,
to look
it's,
like.
It's a literal throwback to the mid '90s alien fucking craze. You remember the mid '90s, dude?
Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Well, not even so much that, but dude, I remember when I was a kid. Alien abductions and the alien autopsy,
those were
fucking huge when we were
X-Files.
That age. Like, you know, and it was a cute throwback to that age. I will say this. I was fairly disappointed in the character design as far as the aliens go. I think they could have done a little bit better as far as designing the creatures themselves.
I just didn't like the overall flow of the movie. Like, the flow and...
Go ahead.
Well, essentially the first 10 minutes of this 20-minute movie are just the kids fucking dicking around being kids.
Right.
Which would have been fine had it been a 90-minute slasher flick or a 90-minute, you know, even zombie abduction or alien abduction film. But if you're going to spend half of your film doing weak character development... You better have a big payoff at the end.
Yeah.
And I felt like this film didn't.
It definitely didn't. I mean, and God, the ending.
But we have to address the unsettling... Okay, so I felt like there was something in this movie that really irritated me. And it was the fact that anytime you were supposed to be the slightest bit startled, there was this loud, wah!
Yeah.
Almost sounded like a buzzer at a hockey game.
Yep.
And anytime the aliens would appear, you heard, excuse me.
Oh.
That was from the depths. You heard that, wah!
Yeah.
And they did it like 6 times, and it just got to be really obnoxious.
Yeah.
And I felt like a lot of what could have been really good tension was broken because of that.
Yeah.
And
I wasn't so sure if the noise was coming from, like...
The actual aliens?
The aliens themselves, or was it a film noise? Like, they're trying to...
I want to believe they tried to startle you. Like, I think it was like a baseball team that sucks... When they put the make noise on the scoreboard because the fans don't know when to be excited. I feel like this film...
Oh, Matt Smith with his baseball analogies.
Why do you think we reviewed The Battery first? And actually,
true.
You picked The Battery.
I did.
No more Battery talk. I'm sorry,
I did.
Jeremy.
And I'm fucking glad that I did. Thank you.
I'm glad you did too. But I feel like this film wanted people to know when they should be... Nervous.
That's exactly fucking it, and I wasn't able to put it into words until you just said it. It literally, they were like, startled!
Yeah.
Be startled!
Hey,
be startled!
Hey.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And that's, I think that's my issue with it.
Yeah. It did have, like, the fucking saddest ending.
Why?
And it wasn't even
it's
because...
Unnecessary.
So at the very end, the little boy, or the young brother, is the last one... I don't know, alive or unabducted, and he gets drawn up into the beam of light, but he's got his dog with him, and the dog is wearing the
GoPro.
The dog
gets tossed.
And the dog, yeah, gets dropped from the beam of light,
which
and
is
so
bullshit.
The last shot of the film is the dog plummeting to the earth.
And who are they trying to...
You know, and I'm not going to fault them for making it look like an animal died, because I'm the guy on here that was saying, why don't we fucking kill children? But, you know, like, that's the... I feel like that's a cheap...
It felt unnecessary.
It felt
it really
like a
did.
Gut punch. It's like, hey, here's this non-entertaining... Oh, right in the gut.
Yeah. But, and if anything, if you know anything about the two of us, we're definitely dog people. So
yeah, definitely.
That was a motherfucker.
You can slay people all day in movies. You fucking touch a dog.
You touch a dog, it's over.
I will come down on you.
My feelings on this whole anthology film were that when I finished...
Wait, you're not skipping the end of tape 49?
No. Okay. I'm not skipping past it at all. I think... My initial viewing of this movie, because it was better than VHS-1, I was willing to give it more sort of merit
slack
than initially having seen it. Because at first I was like, okay, that was better than VHS-1, so automatically I feel better about it. But on my subsequent viewing, which I did see it 1.5 more times,
So eating a pile of shit with sugar is better than eating a pile of shit straight up.
I suppose. And given that everything else being equal, I'm still going to say that VHS-2 was better than VHS-1. Only because that one was so fucking bonkers. I think it sort of makes up
I feel like we can't even say our final thoughts on the movie until we tell
okay,
you.
Okay, yeah. So
tape 49, the thing that ties everything together, the way it ends.
Which was kind of cool.
The first time, I totally missed it. I hated it. And then the second watch through, I was like, oh, I get it. So what happens, I keep burping. If you can hear that, I'm really sorry.
We'll edit that out.
Yeah.
In post.
Good luck. So the tape's over. And the PI looks at the secretary, and he plays another video from Friar Tuck. And Friar Tuck says that he's ready. And his mom knows about his decision and supports his decision. And he then shoots himself in the jaw.
Which was fucking cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. But, you know, they'd already done it at least once. I want to say twice in this movie already. But even still, it was badass. And, I didn't really catch the thing about the mom until later, and I'll get to that at the end of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So then we see, you know, his wife or his secretary's fingers twitching, and we see Friar Tuck in the room to the left. He left the room on the video right as the PI and his chick came in.
Right.
So you see,
that in the video.
He was, in the video that they were playing, he was filming the whole time. He shoots himself in the face. He doesn't die. His jaw is hanging off, and he hears a noise, and he walks out of the room 3 seconds before they break into his house and come into view of the camera.
Which, you think they would have heard the gunshot? Well, did they?
She heard something, because at the very beginning when they're breaking in the house, she said, "Is someone home?" And he made some fucking stupid comment, but...
Rightio.
So yeah, right as you see that on the video, his chick sits up and she attacks him. And they go at it for a second. He snaps her neck and he gets up to run out of the room. And then there's this crazy exorcist shit where even though she's got a snap neck... And she was never attacked, at least as far as I know... So I don't know if she was just, like, the ring and the tape affected her and made her into this weird undead creature.
That's what I kind of got the feeling that that's what they were going for.
Yeah, so then, yeah, she spider walks out of the room after him. And he's in this bedroom and he pulls his gun out and he aims it through the 2-inch opening in the door. She sticks her head out and subsequently gets...
Yeah, she gets blasted.
But we don't know if she's dead or not. And the PI kind of relaxes, and he hears a noise, and he turns and looks.
Direct right.
It turns out Friar Tuck has been in the closet, and I don't know... Oh, they're filming everything because they want to document it so they can get the $1,000 a day.
Right.
So that's why you see Friar Tuck strangling the guy, and then he breaks his neck, and the film ends with Friar Tuck giving the thumbs up. And I was like, that's so fucking stupid. However, when I watched it the second time, it all made sense.
Okay, lay it on me.
A woman calls and offers an obscene amount of money to investigate her missing son. Doesn't have a key, so there's no lawful entry, so you come in through the window. He's filming the whole thing. He talks about the tapes only affect you if you watch it a certain way, but he's been experimenting. Then he says he's decided to make his own tape, and we assume that his own tape is a snuff film of him shooting himself in the face. But right before, he says his mother supports his decision. She knows about and supports his decision. And then he kills the PI and films it. So I have a feeling what had happened was he was really into this snuff shit, and his mother supported his decision. So his mother called and placed the fake missing report with the PI.
So that he could...
Because the secretary said, well, what about the cops? And they said, they don't care about a missing college kid. He's probably passed out in a fucking mountain of beer cans somewhere. So I think the mom made the call, and the original plan the whole time was to get somebody to watch the tapes in order. That's why they were all labeled. They were labeled like X and watch and stuff like that.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So I fucking hated the film the first time through, but when I watched the second time and I caught up on those little things because I was doing my notes, that's when it all kind of made sense. And I was like, oh, okay, so the overall arc is actually pretty good. It's a little bit contrived in the beginning. And but it comes together really nicely in the end. And that's how the movie ends.
Okay, given everything we've chatted about, I would tend to agree with you that the overarching story in VHS 2 was quite a bit more clever than VHS 1. I think VHS 1 was kind of a turd when it came to the sort of like the tying together story.
One was until the very end, once you realized everything. And I guess, you know, they give you little tidbits throughout, but...
You're right. No, I don't think I had seen it quite that way myself. I don't know if it changes things for me at all. I'll have to give it another watch.
Makes it slightly more clever.
Yeah, maybe. So,
overall, I'm thinking it's a great concept. Had they not gone immediately into making a sequel right after the first one was released, and I mean, it was announced within the month.
Yeah, it was really quick.
And it was very rushed, regardless of if they're 4 20-minute, you know...
I may be giving them more credit than need be, really.
Somebody asked you in this podcast. So, I feel like... Had they taken a little bit more time and not rushed to try and capitalize on the success, that they would have had a more solid piece. I feel like Safe Haven was strong enough to be its own 90-minute or 2-hour film.
They really should.
I feel like GoPro would have been a really fun 45-minute, slightly more elaborated piece.
Yep.
The first one could have been better had they
not had the director given, acting well,
that in at least the film. Given some sort of fucking
it needed some teeth
character development
it needed some
all.
Real teeth in that movie. Yeah,
overall I give the movie I give it a C.
Wow.
It okay. was you know I and I feel like I'm being generous. I feel like it was middle of the road. It wasn't complete and utter shit. And I feel like a lot of that C is based on Safe Haven.
That's the thing for me. I feel like
if I took Safe Haven out of it, it would get a C minus D plus.
I think you're right. I think for me, I felt so good about Safe Haven that I want to say like, look, VHS 2 was great. But really what I'm saying is Safe Haven was fucking incredible. And the other ones were all right.
Yeah.
And I can't say that about VHS 1. The vampire chick in VHS 1.
She was hot, but that story ended up being fucking stupid.
It was decent, but I gotta say, nothing in VHS 1 comes anywhere near Safe Haven.
To be fair, nothing or very little of what I've seen in general comes near Safe Haven.
Yeah, it's true.
Three extremes, maybe.
It's true.
There's a few movies that are on par with Safe
Haven. It was pretty brilliant. A movie that gives you that much tension, that much gore, that much just balls out craziness, and then sort of ends it with a bit of a chuckle. I can't say anything wrong with it, man. I really couldn't. And I wanted to really like the Alien Abduction film. I really did. And I think I having seen it the first time, I was like, I really dug that movie, and was kind of at the end not happy with it. But I think I grade VHS 2 a little bit higher than you do. Just because it was a much better effort than VHS 1. And that may be kind of a fucked up way to think about it, but
you're grading on a curve.
I'm grading on a shitty horror movie curve.
And to be fair, I never mentioned this earlier, but I've never been a fan of the shaky cam. I feel like once Blair Witch did it, it was great, and it should have kind of stopped there. Obviously, there's going to be the spin-offs and the copycats, but to just continue to do that as a major movie fucking frame of reference, just a major theme in film, this found footage, shaky cam bullshit.
Yeah.
I just feel like it's cheap.
Yeah.
It's easy. It's not setting up shots, you know?
It's really not. And we really could talk about this for hours. And we've almost talked.
I think an hour and 15 needs to be the cutoff.
We've almost talked the amount of time that the actual movie
plays, yeah.
The actual movie
and
plays.
We didn't do our introductions like we said
we kind of did.
We didn't even say our names.
We did not, so we may we'll say them now.
We'll edit that in. So if you hear our names at the beginning of this episode, it's because we went back and edited them in.
And that's pretty much it. I mean, we've damn near talked an hour and 15 minutes about four short films. And
we expelled a lot of hot air.
More than probably necessary, but this is Jorge.
And this is Matt. I ain't got time for this shit, Smith.
Signing off for episode 2. We hope you've enjoyed it, and we'll hang in there for episode 3, which is going to be fucking rad. That's it. Signing off.
Good night, John boy.